It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. The God Journey.
With the Silks.
Round two with Danny and Sheila Sherry.
Yeah, you did it.
That was on purpose.
You told me.
That was on purpose.
I knew Danny and Sherry Silk.
I called her Sheila at lunch, and they've been mocking me ever since. Oh, yeah. So I might as well make it a public mocking.
Oh, it's more fun to privately mock.
They were with us last week. If you didn't hear that, you might want to go back and do that before you listen to this one. But thanks for staying over, guys. Stayed a whole week down here in L.A. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's been great.
How was the Formula One or what the NASCAR driver?
Over the top.
Prophetically, tell us how
over
it's going to be.
Over the top.
Did you roll it?
No.
No, you didn't.
No, I won.
The Robin.
Whoa, nice. High five. Yeah.
I won.
I won.
I see I'm not the only competitor in the room.
Yeah.
I see that.
I had a friend who was doing some stock car stuff, pastors. All these pastors in the community would race each other at the track, and he's crawling in the car, and he looks at his wife, and he says, "Honey, I'm either going to win, or I'm going to crash.
Or die.
That's it. Those are my two choices. Those are my two choices.
There you go. Things I've got. I win or I die.
I'm going to win.
That's kind of what they do every Sunday, huh?
Because second place.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because second place is first loser.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Second place is first loser?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not going to go over well at the self-esteem class.
You can tell you're not wired well when that's your philosophy of life.
Oy.
Here's, I think you already answered this at the end of the last podcast, but I'd like it maybe be a little more specific. You're talking about this, Melissa is talking about two kids trying to get them out the door for school. One's incessantly late, it turns into a madhouse of yelling and screaming. She said, there is no choice about getting dressed or getting shoes on or eating breakfast or leaving by a certain time, yet we can't force them to move faster. So we usually end up yelling at them like drill sergeants to get their butts in gear, which, of course, reduces them to tears and much wailing, which is just what ruins the morning for everyone. And since we need them to cooperate willingly in order for the morning to go well, how do you inspire children to cooperate under situations like that rather than let them hijack the morning? Kind of already answered that with you. We charge for the second trip.
Well,
you can't leave a six-year-old home by
themselves.
That's
true. No, you sure can't. I back up and rethink that first part where she said that getting dressed, eating breakfast, putting your shoes on, there is no choice. There is. And the choice looks something like this.
Hungry kids going to school.
Well, we call the school and we say, hey, we got a situation with Billy. Billy's having a hard time finding the front door on school days. So we're going to try something. And they have to be willing to receive this on the other end because you need their cooperation, right? And mom announces, hey, my car leaves the house at 7:30. That's when the clock looks like 7 with a 3 and a 0. That's what it'll look like, all right? And then, and don't worry about it. Don't worry about the shape you're in at 7:30.
You're going to school.
And so 7:30 comes around, and mom just comes in and grabs Billy by the wrist wherever he is and heads for the door. And he's hopping up and down and screaming and crying and can't believe, I'm not ready. I didn't eat breakfast. My hair's a mess. I don't even have any clothes. My pajamas are on. What? And mom heads out to the car because in the car is a bag where she put that last night because she had a feeling. And she arrives at school.
Yeah.
And the teacher is meeting them in the parking lot. And mom's on one side and teacher's on the other side. And you say, which side would you like to get out on, their side or my side? While they both reach in and grab a hold of him because he is now acting like people have kidnapped him, right? And teacher ends up with him, and they're headed to the door, to the classroom with the bag. And the teacher hands him the bag and says, Billy, you can come into class when you're dressed. And she shuts the door. Mom is driven off. Billy's in the hallway in his pajamas. Billy opens the bag and hopes this isn't his lunch, right?
Or his sister's clothes.
Yes. Or his sister's clothes. Well, hope they didn't get the bag mixed.
That'd be
a bummer.
We'll go there.
And so the next morning, mom gets up, walks in, and finds that Billy slept in his clothes last night. But he is dressed, he's and he's ready to go. And it isn't too long before when Mom says, my car leaves at 7:30, everybody in the house believes her.
Yeah. It helps, too. We always found it helpful to put the thing that they like last. You can eat when you're dressed.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't come down eating your jammies.
Totally.
So if you didn't get ready to eat, no one's going to die because they missed breakfast.
Nope.
Yeah.
But I think there's a whole generation of parents that, frankly, were raised with somebody else making them happy, and they've inherited that same approach. I mean, I know there's so many people I'm thinking of right now that would think that's absolutely insane and extreme.
Cruel.
And yet...
And guess how many times they have to do it?
I'm thinking once.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the main thing. Most of these interventions are... one or two shots, maybe another shot a week later to kids just checking to see if you're still setting that limit. They'll be back. They're like the raptors in the Jurassic Park. Remember the guy says they keep testing the cage at different spots to see if the power's still on. You know, these children are just like that.
Yeah. Oh, I recognize that.
Well, I think it's like most of us are not really teaching our kids to realize we mean what we say.
And Danny's illustration example is pretty extreme. Like your friends, you know, the people that you know that might look at that and go, that's crazy. Well, the thing about it is you can set the scenario up any way you want. You can come up with a solution that works for you because every kid's different. So you have a different scenario with every kid. One kid, maybe you just say as soon as you are dressed, you can have your breakfast. With the other kid, you have to take it to the extreme because they're going to be president of the United States someday. You know, they have that little edginess to them. They're the two-year-old that
they're
came out
rule
saying,
the world.
Yeah, they're going to rule the world. And so you're taking an extreme...
I thought you meant they're going to give money over to Wall Street.
What you're advocating is helping kids early on to realize that they're responsible for themselves.
Absolutely.
Because I think, you know, I know people that would go, gosh, I couldn't do that. Is that they couldn't stand to bring their child that way. It's too much of a reflection. There's too much of them in this whole scenario for them to make that transfer that it's like, I'm not living my child's life. I think a lot of parents do.
And that's what kids manipulate, don't they?
Absolutely.
Don't they get that?
They can smell fear a mile away.
And disrespect. I love that in your book. The worst thing that a child can do to a parent in a religious setting is show disrespect for the parent.
Oh, over
then the
top.
Parent has to explode all over them to prove they're in charge, and it's just a mess.
Oh.
It's horrible. This one of the things we have around the God Journey podcast is this TACL, Tackle. It's a gal who confessed to her kids one day, older children who were not on the spiritual journey at all because she'd grown up in this very legalistic denomination, raised her kids that way. She finally just said, I am tired of being the tight-ass church lady.
Oh, here we go. Tackle.
And that started the whole change in her family. Well, someone else wrote, I've read Danny Silk's book, and I have to say a huge thanks for recommending it. Prior to becoming an RALLL, and we heard from her a few months ago. Which
What's
is
that? I forget.
A relaxed ass lady living love. That's what that is.
Don't you love our terms, huh? You didn't think you'd say that on the air.
We're not done yet.
Okay.
He says, I realize relaxed I've raised ass. My kids to be TAPs, T-A-P-Ps. Tight ass parent pleasers.
Nice.
Danny's comment about raising children through intimidation has been my style of parenting until
taps
now.
Raw.
Yeah, tight-ass parent pleasers. My wife would be upset because she didn't tell her to turn down the podcast, and her kids just heard that word a few times. It'll ruin my grandchildren.
Uh-oh.
It was the way I was raised, and my view of God as the punisher has permeated my parenting style until the last year when God began to peel away the lies I had chosen to believe regarding his character. Danny's book goes hand-in-hand with this journey, and I'm thankful to have read it. My oldest turned 13 recently, and she looks at me like I'm crazy when I try to love her through her failures. I pray daily that God will restore what has been lost through the years of legalism and intimidation. I'm hoping Danny would share any thoughts he has to us late starters out there.
It's never too late to start. You know, it's your relationship with your kid begins to change as soon as you do. And as long as you can just keep in mind that you're not trying to change your kid, you're trying to change your approach to your relationship with your child. That's all you're trying to do. And as soon as you begin to take responsibility for your half, it changes the relationship. You know, God's relationship towards us never changes. He's always on. It's our response to understanding his heart that changes us completely. So once our kid begins to realize, wow, you're not trying to control me, I don't have to defend myself from your control. You're not trying to hurt me, I don't have to protect myself from you. Your hurtful words. You value me, you value relationship with me, I would be a fool to not let that in. And our kids begin to change. It's never too late. Whether it's your grandchildren, your adult children, or kids that are 12 or 14 at home.
Even if there's been a break in the relationship, because I got a different set of people ask a similar question, where it's like, I think they have, you know, they've done the parenting from more of a strict paradigm, and they've just realized, gosh, this is a complete different thought. How do we go about making the shift when it looks like there's already been a break in the relationship and they don't know how to recover it? Because they now have a teenager that is going like, you know what, anyone over 30 doesn't have anything worth saying to me. And what do you do there? I mean, is this, you prepare yourself for the time that it takes? Or
your goal. You know, I think forever, Christian parents in particular, or just passionate parents, parents that really believe that they are living a life that others should live, whatever your paradigm. As soon as I shift out of trying to convince you to live a life that I think is important and shift into my relationship of love with you is the most important thing to me, that will reconcile. That will bring love casts out the fear, meaning that when I inject our relationship with love, your fear of me reduces dramatically. And as long as, you know, my pursuit of you in the relationship is about the relationship and not about my agenda, you don't feel controlled. And that is what those kids are fighting. Those kids are fighting feeling controlled in the presence of their parents.
You mentioned, I think it was in the last podcast, how a lot of parents, you know, they live in that context of fear. How does a parent shift that? I mean, because I think of the whole dynamic. There's a lot of people that God as the punisher is the lens that they have.
Yeah.
And when you start trying to talk a different language, they're going like, gee, if only that was true. It's not like it's made sense, and it's not like they have a heart agreement with that. They're going like, I don't know life like that. Talk a little bit. How does that lens start to change? Because otherwise, these can just sadly be techniques. Someone's trying to implement what you just said of the answers. When my relationship with that child becomes my preeminent focus, well, that's just reality. That's going to change things. What about someone who's stuck in that fear paradigm where it's like anger and intimidation is the lens that they do understand discipline through? How does that change?
Are you talking about the child or the parent?
I'm talking about I think it's got to start in the parent first.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of parents that hasn't changed for them. This is just concepts.
Right.
It's not heart reality.
I think a whole bunch of this comes out of their God concept. You know, who is God? Until you can see God as an unconditional loving pursuer of your well-being and your destiny, until you can get a revelation of that, these are just skills and techniques to try to get manipulate with as little conflict as possible.
We talked in the break a little bit where a lot of people's Old Testament lens, they look at things in the Old Testament, they go, well, it certainly seems like God was ticked off then.
Yeah.
And then you see Jesus walking through the New Testament and he seems to be happy and hanging out with sinners. And he's like, well, what happened? Did God get saved between Malachi and Matthew? I mean, what happened?
Danny, why don't you answer the question why you believe, what's the greatest lie people believe, in your opinion, that I could control?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good spot to kick into that.
Help me out.
Well,
I like you, Sheila. Would you help me out a little?
Sheila.
Thanks for coming, Sheila.
Well, he's talking about our God concepts and all that, but you always say that on a good day I controlled me, mm-hmm. and that people live their lives with the lie, believing that they have the ability to control others and then be controlled by others, which plays out in not only their relationship with their kids, with their spouse, with their boss, with whoever, mm-hmm. and what happens when they believe that lie.
And I guess, and probably rooted in that, is when we believe that God's trying to control us. When we believe that, you know, there is a secret code to pleasing God, and all of us are to live in the anxiety of not knowing that code and living every day trying to figure out His perfect will, and then when we don't have the peace that comes from, I got it, I figured God out, then I'm always living in getting it wrong. And the response from a controlling parent getting it wrong was punishment. And getting it wrong with God is, okay, it was His mercy today. He didn't punish me, although I deserved it. And that is my paradigm. I should have been punished all day by God today because I'm a worm, I'm a lowlife, I'm a nothing. And I live in that constant anxiety. It is very difficult to ever experience God's love when you think that God is an uptight, punishing parent because I didn't figure out what He needed.
Well, salvation is also in being right for a lot of people in that paradigm. And so mm-hmm. It's like they are living in a constant sense of anxiety. How do you help people shift out of that? I mean, what do you do? I'm just not going to say I'm old. You just met me sitting in your office and I'm going like, help, Danny. What do I do? I am messed up. I see it. But I still don't have an emotional revelation that it's different. I was programmed this way, and I'm hearing you. Mm-hmm. How do you help people shift that? Because I think that's where a lot of people do get stuck.
Yeah. It has to come from experiencing love. You know, it has to come from, you know, being able to connect with God and ask Him, is this the truth or is this a lie? And hearing His voice and being changed in who you understand God to be, that only comes through revelation. It doesn't come from, you know, reading the Bible, apparently, because 2,000 years later, here we are having this conversation, you know. It doesn't come from, you know, going to the right church or anything. I mean, you know, Paul Young, he has this major encounter. He has a revelation in the shack of Daddy's love. And it radically changes his life. I mean, that is the pursuit. The pursuit is to exchange or to, you know, root out the lies that we have believed about who He is, His heart towards us, and then receive in the truth. And that's commonly done through somebody who knows the truth.
Right.
Through somebody who knows God. And it would be something we do through prayer counseling. It's something we do through deliverance, whatever it is. But I have to, I can't get somewhere that doesn't exist. So I have to have a revelation of where that place is and what it looks
like. Yeah, and for Paul Young, that was an 11-year reality. I mean, it's a weekend in the shack. And I think for some of the people, they're just starting to see through some of this thing. Take some patience. You don't have to change your whole parenting style tomorrow.
Right.
Let God win something in your heart.
Absolutely.
That then begins to give you a different perspective with your kids, rather than I just got to change everything tomorrow so my kids will act better. It's still the same problem. You're just going to use it as a tool to manipulate.
Totally. You totally are.
Yeah. Here's a question from someone that, let me start with this one first. How does one repair, reestablish the heart-to-heart connection that is the basis for this kind of parenting, especially if one teenager really doesn't want that relationship or see any need for it? I see first that we will need to repent for our ignorance in parenting and say we're beginning a new approach to empower them to make good, but I don't know that our 16-year-old is going to care.
Well, I doubt that's true. It just feels true. You know, every 16-year-old wants to be loved.
I think so too, yeah.
And every kid wants to be loved by their parents.
Their parents don't believe you yet.
Yeah, they don't believe that you changed.
That's a powerful statement right there.
Yeah,
I think you have to live this out over time. You may have to win their heart back.
It is, and you have to believe that you changed first, and that takes months,
if not years.
You know, to believe that you've changed, and then the people around you, it takes even longer for them to believe that you've changed. But
because by the time your kid's 16, how many fads have they seen you on?
Right. Which diet are you on?
Good Lord, how many books have you read?
You're right. Yeah. We're going to do this again. We're changing it again. Yeah.
Went to a conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We made the mistake of providing our adult children too much help. We can just cut them off. However, we'd appreciate your suggestion on how to break their dependence on us while maintaining a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Adult children have been helped too much.
Get this tattoo on the inside of your left arm.
Okay.
What are you going to do? And when the child begins to explain, you know, I lost my job. I can't pay my rent. This happened, that happened. The parent reads their tattoo. What are you going to do?
What am I going to, nothing. I'm powerless. I'm a failure member. I couldn't read until I was 30. You know how rough my life has been. What do you mean, what am I going to do?
I don't know. I just wonder, what are you going to do? Because what I'm now beginning to do is I'm beginning to shift responsibility for your life back to you. This would be a great thing for young parents to learn as well. As, you know, when, he hit me, he took my toy, oh, honey, you look really upset. What are you going to do? Because that's the spot where we jump in.
Punch my brother's
tattoo. Yeah. And on the other arm, Wayne, is another tattoo. How will that work out for you? All right, so this
he's
is
smaller than
it works out pretty good. And how then? What are you going to do with me? You know, there is. There is. I'm trying to shift responsibility back to you, every possible opportunity I have, and then I help you. What they mean by I help my kids too much was I convinced my child that their life was my problem. And that doesn't help. That's codependency. Codependency is I work harder on your life than you do. And so I really want to get back to what are you going to do? And they start listening to their options. They start, you know, running through decisions. They start thinking. And then I say, well, what about this? How would this work? And now I've helped. I've come alongside. I've given you wisdom and counsel. I've not tried to control you towards my solutions.
Yeah, that's good.
Do you guys have any thoughts about the whole role of grandparents?
We love being grandparents.
You do?
We are grandparents, yes.
So how do grandparents factor in terms of, you know, someone saying, hey, you know, I didn't, if only I had done this with my kids. I didn't.
Yeah,
but now they have kids, and I'm wanting to be a source of love and help. Talk about that a little bit.
There's lots of people that buy the book or the DVD series for their kids, which doesn't always work out
for
them. They're trying to help, and it's okay, but getting permission first is usually the best way. But I think it goes back to what we talked about. Your child goes from teacher to teacher and figures out how to be different for every different teacher because they, you know, they're smart. And so grandparents can just start using these tools, these principles, and their children, they'll get different results. And then their kids will look at it and go, how'd you get him to do that? You know, how did that work? Tell me what you did. But if you come around with, you know, do it like this, I got this book for you, that doesn't always work very well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, too, it's not just a matter of the parents being the spoilers now. You know, grandparents really pick up that edge of, I'm helping when my kids are here, my grandkids are here. I'm not trumping my daughter's or son-in-law's discipline on my kids, but I am also not wanting my kids just to get away with everything here, my grandkids. I'm really careful to walk a good line, and if I need to discipline them with something going on, I try to do it differently and intervene before my daughter does so she doesn't have to. I'm not trying to undermine her parenting because I know she's just convinced, what happened to the dad I grew up with?
Right.
He's gone.
Yeah. This is not fair.
This is not
fair. I must punish him.
back to God, this kid's rookies. I have no doubt, except for the stamina issues, I would be a far better parent today than I was to my own kids. Yeah. I think that's just true.
And you probably have more energy around them than maybe your daughter does at times because she's worn out
all the time. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Here's a good one. Our oldest has always been very hard to parent. We definitely made the mistake of being controlling parents, starting out with growing kids God's way, which obviously didn't work in God's way. That's a dumb title for a book anyway, unless you really nailed it. these friends of yours? No. Okay.
We taught those classes for years.
Before we really had kids and then growing to mock it when we couldn't make our kids do it. So that's kind of their story. We even let him move out of town near to us because we knew he would do it anyway, and we wanted to have a relationship with him instead of forbidding him to do it. I wouldn't say he is particularly rebellious or even into anything. He's just always been very, and I mean very, strong-willed and knows what he wants to do. Relationship has been very hard as we were always angry with him, something we are constantly evaluating and working on. We have been accused of not parenting anymore because we have stopped trying to be in control and make love and relationship a priority. So is there a certain point with kids where you have to take your hands off and trust that they are on their own God journey, even if they don't know it yet? Is there an age? Do we do it too soon? Our son is 17 in a couple of weeks. Can we shed some light on the strong-willed variety of kid? Did we create the strong will by our own need to control or make ourselves feel better, or have we done all we could in a difficult situation? How do you stand back and let your kids make mistakes yet still offer a relationship not based on performance?
Oh, well, you know, what age do we allow our children to walk? You know, it's as soon as they can. You know, and it's because the goal was for them to learn to walk. Most of us don't have as a goal for our children to have their own relationship with God until they're 16, 17, we send them to camp, you know. It's very important that early on they begin to learn that it is their job to manage their life. And we keep handing over different parts of it, you know. We keep increasing the load of personal responsibility on their life, and it makes it a natural transition. Now, I think one of the things that scares parents more than anything is that their kids won't serve the Lord the way they do. And I think this is, you know, kind of entrenched in religion is we don't change. So I'd like to hand you the same relationship with God I have. And it isn't something my kid wants. Just like I'd like to give you my business, or I'd like to give you this old suit, or I'd like to give you my favorite hat.
My
you know,
these
kids are like, no, thank you. Wow. No way. I got to find my own thing. But if the goal is for you to find yours, then it shows up, you know, just increasing evidence that they have these kinds of questions, they have this kind of personality. Probably the toughest kid to do this with is the passive compliant child, not the bullheaded freight train. Those kids are pretty clear early on that this kid wants more decisions. It's the compliant, obedient looking child. It's very difficult to train them in finding their own path.
Yeah.
You guys, in the book, you talk about presenting your kids with decisions. And I'd love you to explore that. I mean, it was hilarious. We were at the dinner table the other night, and my oldest son, he's 14, he was doing something he shouldn't have done. And I started thinking out loud before I really thought through. It's like, Jared, you got two choices. You can either sit down or... I didn't have another choice because it's like I only wanted one outcome. I mean, it was a wonderful moment of laughing because we've been talking about this stuff, and Kelly looked at me like, could come up with number two, huh? And I just realized,
or you will clean the chicken coop.
Yeah, there we go.
Get it.
Talk about that whole dynamic of presenting choices for your kids and. Because I think, I mean, I recognize instantly, I wasn't presenting any meaningful choices. I was still trying to control him to one particular outcome.
Totally.
Talk about that a little bit.
You know, it's not always presented in choices. You know, there are times when I just say, hey, stop. But that is a time when I have a connection. I can do that when I got money in the bank. I can write those kind of big old checks when I got money in the bank. But if I'm overdrawn or I'm running lean and I say, hey, stop. Ooh, okay, this could lead to a power struggle. This kid could stretch me right over the barrel right here and just keep on doing it. And now, okay, I'm sorry. I think I just tried to take all the control away from you. I have a couple choices. And the couple choices are all different kinds of ways. Back to the Love and Logic stuff we were talking about last time. You know, the Love and Logic Institute, they have zillions of skills, zillions of resources about how to be more ready, I think. You know, they have ADHD, ADD specific resources. They have grandparenting resources. They've been doing this for 30 years, you know. So that's just a little plug for Love and Logic. But the thing that reduces your anxiety going into a power struggle is that you have a plan of what you're going to do if your kid resists. What are you going to do if your kid says no? What are you going to do if your kid makes a poor choice? What are you going to do? That you have to have a plan with what you're going to do with you. And if you do, then, you know, your anxiety drops tremendously no matter what they do. Okay. So that's when, well, what are you going to do, tattoo? I have a tattoo. I have a plan. I've been wearing this thing around waiting for you to not know what to do so I could ask you, what are you going to do? You know, I bring with me a plan. Practice offering choices when you don't need them. Like, what is his name, Jared?
Yeah.
Jared. Hey, Jared, do you want to use your plate or my plate? What? My plate. Okay. You know, you're just getting your mind saturated with, okay, I'm no longer barking out commands to get my will done. I'm actually trying to create a powerful person who can think. And that is my goal as a father, is I'm going to approach you like you have an expectation to be powerful. You know, I wouldn't order Wayne around. You know, I wouldn't order the mayor or the policeman around. I wouldn't say, hey, get over here and pick that up. You know, I'd say, excuse me. You know, I would expect you to be powerful when I interact with you. It changes my posture. It changes my paradigm.
So practicing is for not the child, but for the parent.
Yeah, so for Brad.
Yeah, Brad.
So Brad.
That was slow.
So Brad, are you ready with a plan?
I think the whole concept of empowering your kid as a decision maker, as opposed to just telling them and prescribing for them, because that, I mean, they might be compliant, but that doesn't mean that their heart is engaged.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think what you're suggesting is that whole, you're transferring in the appropriate doses the decisions that, you know, the child needs to figure out and the problems, meaning that they take ownership. It's their problem. It's not my problem. And so the solution has to come from
within you,
within them. And that's where you're coming alongside to help.
You start introducing choices to a child who's been barked at and commanded. And I've had parents come back to me and say, I couldn't believe it, but my 9-year-old, I was offering them some choices. Honey, what would you like to do, this or that? And they just looked at me and they screamed in my face, why don't you just tell me what to do like you used to? And the parent was like, oh, my gosh, I never realized it was that obvious that I was doing all the thinking. But that's what starts to boil up in a kid who's now saddled with this level of responsibility to own their life.
Wow. That's good.
Question you may have already answered, talking about some of the resources at the Love and Logic place, but somebody wrote and said, we had a 14-year-old son diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of high-functioning autism. Mm-hmm. Has Danny or either of you, for that matter, had much exposure to raising a child like this? And can you give us any help with a kid that's severely challenged in some way?
I get that question a lot with special needs children, parents with special needs, teachers with special needs. I'm sure that Love and Logic has some specific resources in that they aim their services at public education and mental health professionals. So those are the people on the front lines with these kinds of issues. But, you know, the bottom line is this. Every human being needs control. They need freedom. They need love. So the approach to growing even a severely handicapped child, growing them in relationship and in independence comes from learning to empower them, learning to honor them, learning to respect them. Now, primary caregivers of those children know them the best, and they'll know the innuendos and the specifics about how to apply any skill set. But the core paradigm is you need to be powerful. You need to be free. You need to be loved. And there's all kinds of different skills that will do that.
Let's go back to the prodigal, the older child. And we talked about, kind of got through this with a teenager, but say your child's 19, hanging out with a bunch of pot-smoking dudes. They get an apartment together. You're worried about your son being arrested. Now he's being demotivated to do college. You've been reacting to that out of a lot of fears. You've been trying to control him, up to even, doing some high enforcement things for a teenager at home to make sure he hasn't snuck pot into the house or anything. And now he's older, and now he's off on his own. Do you just let that have free rein till he gets busted or his life ends up?
Is he living at my house or on his own?
He's on his own. Mm-hmm. He's out now with his buds.
Yeah.
Let's do both. Let's do who's in my house. He's sneaking pot in, putting in a sock, hiding it in the drawer.
Yeah, I don't have any fear of going to prison in my house. You know, I don't have a fear of the police raid in my house. I don't have to live like that, especially if you're 19. You know, and if you're 17, I'll call the cops myself and say, hey, look what I found in my kid's drawer. I won't live in that vulnerable to my freedom. I won't do that. I'll introduce an authority bigger than me as quickly as you need it. Because if you can't respond to and be guided by my authority, there is another layer of authority that will guide you. They'll do it differently, and they don't care if they have a relationship with you. This is all based on the law. We can have decisions made on protecting our relationship, or you can simply go to war against the laws of the land, and they will. I'll introduce that, though. I won't protect you from that.
Okay, and if they're outside the home, would you think of calling the cops on them, or would you just let that run its course?
I would let it run its course, but I'm back to trying to protect my heart-to-heart condition with my son, because the only thing that I have to influence you is your value for our relationship. Now, you're smoking pot, and you're sleeping with your girlfriend, and you're, you know, whatever you're doing.
Not going to college.
Not going to college, you know. I'm going to tell you how that's affecting me. I'm not going to tell you what I think is going to happen to you, because now I'm trying to control you. But when I crack open my heart and I say, son, this scares me, this hurts me, I feel disappointed, I wake up every day scared for you that the way you're living is going to trash the quality of your life. And maybe through tears, I'm sharing that with my son, who I've shown him my heart. And I know he values that because we've had a connection before. And I'm just trying to get it back.
And if he doesn't, because you haven't had it before?
Well, then I start and I don't stop doing it until I get it. Because the biggest problem I have isn't him not going to college. The biggest problem I have is him not connected to my heart.
Hmm. So always coming back to that priority.
Yeah.
This is what I said when we were recommending the book on my blog and other places, that the things I think you talk about in Loving Our Kids on Purpose is way beyond parenting.
Yeah.
It goes to how we treat each other as the body of Christ. We're always trying to control each other, and leadership is all about who gets to manipulate the other people to do what we think is in your best interest.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with how God parents us, the whole discipline scenario of Hebrews 12 and grace. It isn't just, you do this, I'll punish you over here. It's God putting the relationship first.
Yeah.
And the problem with us as humans, we talk about this in the podcast all the time. We seem to value relationship last. We'd prefer to live in the law, prefer to live under contract. We'll throw a relationship out in a minute if I feel like I've got to protect my rights against you.
Yeah.
Instead of, I love the language you used it last week on the podcast, of fighting for the relationship, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your brother in Christ, whether it's your children. Relationship is the only thing of real value in this world. It's not what you own. It's not where you live.
Totally. We, you know, we've made an idol, especially in Christianity, we've made an idol out of agreement. You know, we gather in a church around what we agree. We gather politically around what we agree. We've taken this idea that if we can agree together, we can be in fellowship together. And we've exalted it way past covenant. See, because I don't know how many families agree with each other all the time, but I've never been in one. And, you know, right. I'm in a marriage where there is no stronger covenant that I have than with this lady right here, and I haven't had any stronger disagreements with any human being on the earth than this woman right here.
You're welcome.
And
Sheila?
Sheila. Yeah.
Poor Sheila. Sheila from now on.
But the basis of covenant isn't agreement. The basis of covenant is relationship and love and protecting that connection.
See, I think, again, you just tilted a whole bunch of herd of cows right there. It's like, the basis of covenant is not agreement. I don't think most people know how to maintain any kind of intimacy in the face of disagreement. I think they're terrified of it, and it gets turned into a power struggle. How do you not get backed into that corner?
This is when I'm going to tell you about me, not tell you what you should do.
Okay, that's a new move for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. And so the practice of intimacy is into me you see because I show you.
Wow. Say that again.
Into me you see.
Into me you see because I show you. And I get good at that. Most of us aren't very good at that. Most of us are good at trying to figure out a way to manipulate you to meet my needs without ever telling you what they are.
Okay, little devil's advocate. I don't know why he needs one, but the whole dynamic of...
volunteer.
I'm usually the one doing this.
I feel like there's, at times, other people in our lives that they do the emotional manipulation. They make their happiness. They share, oh, this hurts me, because they want a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm somehow supposed to then just adapt to their desired outcome because they're now showing me that they're hurt and disappointed. Well, you know, I want to care for the relationship, but sometimes I think that's totally whacked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's my job to make them happy or that they want this particular outcome. And, oh, if I would just only, I mean, how do you avoid that?
Well, it starts with this, Brad. This goes back to that core belief that, do I believe I can control you? Do I believe you can control me? Because if I believe either one of those two lies,
you're messed up.
We're going to practice it. I'm going to try to control you, and I'm going to defend myself against being controlled by you. But if I don't believe you can control me, and then you start doing that, then I can go, whoa, dude, I feel so manipulated when you do that. Now, I think what I hear you say is that I hurt you or I disappointed you. Is that what you're telling me? And now I can actually have an open, honest conversation with you until you find out what it is exactly is going on with you. Because if that's just tactics that you use to get your way, usually in relationships, that's just what you're doing.
Exposed pretty quick.
But when I go, crack, whoa, I feel really manipulated and punished.
I wish this was a video podcast. Every time about intimacy, you see, he's ripping his chest, his rib cage open, going, have a look at my heart, which is pretty dramatic. Because I think that's what we don't do in relationship.
Right.
I think once a relationship starts to go south, the protective screens come on pretty quick. And then particularly if someone has removed themselves from a relationship and wants just to fight an issue and not even look into my heart or let me see into his, there's just no hope there other than the relationship just gets shattered.
It is so easy to turn our love into politics. And that's what we've done. That's, I think, a religious spirit, a political spirit has dominated our churches, our church government, our church relationships to where we will only trust or empower people who agree with us politically.
Hmm.
We'll only trust or empower people who agree with us religiously. And when we do that in our families, we then pervert love to be agreement. And we really don't know how to hang on to covenant relationships when we disagree. Mm. That would help explain, you know, 50% divorce rate in the church.
Mm. And if we're both valuing the relationship, we're not working toward somebody gets their way and the other person gives in. What we are looking for is how do we respect each other, their needs in the relationship, and find that win-win. Find a way to win the relationship and resolve the issue in a subordinate way.
Like Sherry mentioned earlier, you know, the definition of honor is two powerful people in a relationship. What we classically define honor as is I have all the power, you have no power. Whether that is the leader to the follower, the husband to the wife, the parent to the child, the boss to the employee, I have all the power, you have no power. And that's dishonor. But when two powerful people work to stay powerful while they communicate through a disagreement, what they're going to discover is this. You need something. I want to supply it. I need something, and you want to supply it. And now we reach a higher agreement, which is we're going to decide something neither one of us would have done by ourselves because we are now aware of the needs that have to be met in the solution instead of just trying to convince each other to yield.
And that's wonderful, but that's very rarely experienced. One person just jumps out of the relationship and says, you're a piece of crud, I'm sick of you, and that's where it ends.
You don't care about anybody but yourself, so I'll care about myself.
Yeah, and that's sad. Well, thank you guys so much. It has been a joy to get to know you over the last few hours and share you with some of the folks that check in with Brad and I now and again on the God Journey. Danny and Sherry Silk, the book, again, Loving Our Kids on Purpose. New book coming out, The Culture of Honor.
The Culture of Honor.
When is it out, do you know?
It comes out December 1st, I believe.
And same publisher?
Yes.
Destiny?
Destiny.
And you guys' website where people can jump on and kind of dialogue with you is what?
We have lovingonpurpose.com. We also have a forum on there. Fielding parenting questions. And
yeah, if we didn't get your questions in, that might be a good place to go.
It's our team helping, which is really what we want is we don't have all the answers. We don't know all the answers, but if you help, jump on and help each other, you could probably figure it out.
That's great. Parents working together to get this thing done.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for giving us the last day of your vacation, or the second of the last day, I guess. But
you're very welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.